So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Wisconsin Eye is letting both candidates who want to be chair of the Wisconsin Democratic Party talk about why they are most qualified. So today, Ben Wickler of Madison, former Washington director for MoveOn.org, welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
Foundational question, why are you a Democrat, Ben?
I am a Democrat fundamentally because I believe in people, in the public interest. I think we're all in this together, and I want to be part of a party that values everyone and wants, you know, a country that lifts everyone up.
Now, you are native of Madison, but
yes.
you've been in Washington for how long and came back to Madison with your family when?
Yeah, so I lived in D.C. 2013 till last year. We moved back last year after the election.
Okay.
I grew up on the near west side of Madison. I've been involved in politics since I was a kid. The first campaign I actually volunteered for was when my godmother ran for Congress, Ada Deer.
Oh, yeah.
So I was 11 years old.
I covered that campaign, not to show my age, but go ahead. All right, go ahead.
Yeah.
So that was your first campaign?
Yes.
At 11.
Yeah.
Ada Deer ran for the U.S. House.
Excuse me,
go ahead.
Yeah. And had this kind of come from behind primary victory because she was, you know, before it was cool, she wasn't taking PAC money. She was running this very grassroots campaign. And she's my mom's best friend. My mom and Ada are both social workers, so they'd known each other. It has known me since I was in utero, and I stuffed envelopes for her. I put up yard signs, and she used to lead the Menominee Nation. So I'll never forget her victory speech when she won her primary. She came out and said, "I've been waiting a long time to say this, me nominee," which was the greatest line. Something
historical.
Yes.
Two words.
Yep.
Me nominee.
That was the banner headline in the State Journal the next morning, and I think I sort of got hooked. I grew up. Involved in activism and in politics and in student journalism. I had an underground student paper in middle school and in high school. And when I was in high school, my mom and I helped organize debates for state representatives about issues affecting young people in Madison and Wisconsin. And this one state rep always showed up. She always won the debates. And then she ran for Congress. And I volunteered, and my friends and I all volunteered on Tammy Baldwin's first race
for Congress. Sounds like Senator Baldwin you're talking
about. That's exactly who I'm talking about.
Right.
So when she won, the headline the next morning was Youthquake, because so many young people had gotten involved in her campaign. And it was, I think we all had this collective sense of having been involved in a victory, which I think the experience of being involved in something that works and makes a difference, mm-hmm. that's what really hooks people in. You care about it, but then when you have this sense of agency of being able to do something that matters, it's hard to think about doing much else after that.
Well, after college, you had a decision. Come back to Wisconsin to make an impact, and you chose to join MoveOn and went to Washington. You were in Washington for how many years?
So I have done a whole bunch of different things in politics and activism since college. At the end of college, I met Al Franken, who was at that time a comedian thinking about politics, and I worked with him on the book Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them a Fair and Balanced Look at the Right, which became a runaway bestseller, and then that led to him having a radio show that I produced, and so I moved to New York to work on that, and fell in love while I was in college with my now wife, Beth, she grew up in Arkansas. She will attest that I've been talking about coming home to Wisconsin since you met me and before then, but there were a lot of zigzags along the way.
Right.
I worked on Sherrod Brown's first Senate race in Ohio. I worked on as a climate change activist and human rights activist with MoveOn's international sibling organization, mm-hmm. Avaaz. And then she did a PhD meanwhile, and then she got a job in the U.S. Senate. That brought us to D.C., and that's when I came to MoveOn. So, and during that time, I came home to join the Act 10 protests and testify then. I knocked doors for, in the 2016 election here. But I lived in a bunch of other places. And at MoveOn, I became the D.C. director, and then we were thinking about moving home in 2016, and then Trump won. Mm-hmm. And it became like, the fight is here. As I just, my own personality is that I am drawn to the biggest kind of fights for things that I believe in that I can find. And after Trump won, it felt like really important to be right where the battle was. And I got
but it's a swamp.
Yeah, but sometimes
I've heard that term.
If you want to battle the swamp creatures, you got to wade into the swamp.
Okay. Well, you were Washington director for MoveOn.org.
Yeah, Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yes. What victories do you feel you played an important role in that capacity?
Excuse me. So I started when Obama was president in 2014. And at that time, the first big fight was for the Iran nuclear deal, which I saw, and, you know, millions of people saw as a just critical way to avoid winding up in a war with Iran and to limit nuclear proliferation, which alongside climate change, I think, is the biggest existential threat that we face. And so, you know, we had a Republican legislature and a Democratic president, mm-hmm. sort of kind of like what we have in Wisconsin now. And I was working, I worked very closely with the Obama White House to help coordinate grassroots, you know, energy to urge Congress to do the right thing and not strike down the Iran nuclear deal. And that was a victory. I remember I went in and watched the Senate do their vote. And by the end, almost every Democrat was supporting the Iran nuclear deal, and it was not undercut by Congress. After Trump won, things shifted a lot because at that point we had unified Republican control.
Yes.
And I was given this kind of impossible project after Trump's victory to come up with a plan to save the Affordable Care Act. And at that point, you know, Paul Ryan had passed repeal 87 times through the House. Mm-hmm. Senate had, Mitch McConnell had already guided a bill in 2015 repealing the ACA through the Senate that was vetoed by Obama. And Trump said he was going to do it on day one to take away the Affordable Care Act. Interest groups actually thought it was a done deal. And initially, they were not planning to get involved in the fight at all. So the only force that could stand in the way was a wave of grassroots opposition. And I remember I wrote a strategy memo at MoveOn, you know, in the fall of 2016 before the inauguration, kind of outlining what I thought it would take and what our chances of success were. I thought 70% chance we'd lose in the first month, but it was still worth fighting it out.
Did you pin your hopes on a certain Arizona senator who who's no longer with us, who voted in the middle of the night?
I will tell you about that night. But at the beginning, we thought, you know, we didn't know for sure whether the House or Senate would be a better bet because the Senate had more, you know, had some key votes that might lean our way, but the House had more people who might be vulnerable in the election. And so we decided to fight on both fronts. And the key thing was organizing and working with people who were directly affected, whose own their own health care would be affected, not focusing on Hollywood celebrities or, you know, past presidential candidates or whatever as the key voices, make it about human beings and their lives and try to get them, you know, into the public spotlight in a way that they could directly speak to the Republicans who were, you know, potentially going to take away their health care. And that, I don't know if you remember the town hall meetings in February of 2017, where just person after person stood up and said, I am alive today because of the Affordable Care Act. You know, this bill could endanger my life or endanger the life of my child.
So you were a key part of that strategy.
We had volunteers calling Republican offices all over the country to find out when they were going to appear in public. And we, through MoveOn, we created a site called resistancerecess.com. We had 45,000 people who RSVP'd to go to town hall meetings through that site and worked with this huge coalition of folks, you know, to get people to the place where their voices could matter at that moment. And that was one piece of it. We also mobilized 500,000 phone calls, 3,000 protests at congressional offices across the country. You know, there's a giant fight. I think the sort of voices of real people were the most significant factor in victory, and especially people with disabilities who, you know, came. There was this moment I remember when people from the group ADAPT, which is a disability rights group, came to Mitch McConnell's office and refused to leave until he would talk to them, and they called security that dragged people out of their wheelchairs out of his office, and Mitch McConnell's office is down the hall from the media room. So all these reporters came, and the whole thing was on video. It was live on CNN, and that moment kind of helped crystallize what the stakes were for people, because you know you couldn't watch that and imagine that this didn't really matter.
You have played on a national level with Al Franken, Sherrod Brown, and been in D.C. So you made a decision with your family to come back to Madison. But if you played on such a national level, why focus now on state party chairman?
Yeah. So there's two things. First of all, I decided to move home with my family before this was even on the radar. I've wanted to raise my kids here. My mom and stepdad, I live two blocks from my wife and our three kids, and I, we live in the house that I grew up in now, which is, it's just a dream. And my, you know, kids in the bathroom, we have a one side of the door frame with markings from my height when I was growing up, and now the other side of the door frame has my kids' heights. So I just love that. I originally thought I would keep working for MoveOn. I knew I wanted to do everything I could to help stop Trump, and I knew I wanted to help try to, you know, bring back Wisconsin's progressive tradition as the, you know, direction the state should move, but wasn't sure how I'd do it.
Did you think about running for office?
I didn't know what I was. My first thought was to get involved in the fight for Medicaid expansion, and I, you know, wanted to figure out what is the coalition, could MoveOn start a state chapter that would focus on that, and then Martha Lanning decided not to run for re-election, and that, you know, made me think things that I've done at MoveOn helped to raise money, to raise millions of dollars to invest in grassroots activism, helped to put powerful technology in the hands of activists on the ground to be able to advocate on issues and also to elect people, which I can, you know, talk more about, but things like text messages and social media, working with the press, working with coalitions, working with electeds, all that is stuff that I did at MoveOn that really maps onto the state party chair's job. And I thought, will I make a bigger difference if I run for this role and get involved in helping support the activists on the ground in the state party, or if I continue at MoveOn? MoveOn's in great shape. We, our small donor base has quadrupled since Trump was elected. Our staff is more than, I think our staff has tripled at this point. We're stronger than we've ever been. And I feel like I really helped to build MoveOn into a stronger place. But I, you know, I know that they're going to keep rocking, and I think I can help bring a lot of you know, the skills and networks and the ideas that I've learned to supercharge the state party.
But
that's why I'm running.
As a Wisconsin native,
yeah,
it must have broken your Democratic heart when President Trump carried Wisconsin by 22,700 votes.
Yes.
Why did President Trump carry Wisconsin since no Republican had done so since Ronald Reagan in 84?
Yeah.
Why?
So there are a bunch of different things that had to go wrong for that to happen. But the thing I'll particularly point to is that there has been a continual Republican effort that's been intentional and strategic to break the back of progressive power in Wisconsin, particularly targeting organized labor. And more broadly, with voter ID laws, with you know, the way that Republicans have legislated, it's been trying to turn the state red, and it's worked in other places. Ohio now looks like a red state. Iowa looks like a red state. There's these places where there used to be especially strong labor presence and a progressive tradition, and they were swing states. And to me, you know, after 2016, the question became, has Wisconsin become a red state now? Have they made it impossible to do organizing to turn out Democratic voters? Or is this still a state where, you know, each side has a fighting chance? And I came home for weeks at a time in 2018 to try to help, you know, support the governor and Mandela Barnes to get elected. The state party has done an extraordinary thing with grassroots organizing. Between 2016 and 2018, it built this neighborhood teams program and actually knocked far more doors in 2018 than it did in 2016 in a presidential year for much less cost, because they empowered grassroots activists to be able to fight. I think we saw with the Supreme Court race, it's still, you know, nothing is a done deal.
The nonpartisan Supreme Court race in which Lisa Neubauer was endorsed by many Democrats and the Republican Party was all in for Justice-elect Brian Hagedorn.
That's right.
If you're the chair, are you going to keep the party in as actively supporting someone who is not Justice Daniel Kelly next April?
So, you know, one thing I'll say is that the whoever the nominee is for Supreme Court will make a decision about whether they would welcome an in-kind contribution from the Democratic Party. I will also say that Democrats can organize around their values and, you know, on a volunteer basis, go out and try to urge folks to support a Supreme Court justice who aligns with their vision of how justice should work in the state. And I think Republicans look at these as partisan races, even if they're not listed that way. That at the end of the last Supreme Court race, the Republican State Leadership Committee put in $1.3 million. We don't know who the donor was. In the final week of the Supreme Court race, they contacted everyone who'd ever been even tangentially related to the Republican Party here, and they turned out 160,000 voters who hadn't voted in the previous year's race. And that was, you know, how they crossed the finish line. And I think we should leave no organizing operation on the table to stop Republicans from continuing to hijack the Supreme Court to make it a vehicle for the Republican agenda.
This may be too simplistic, but it seems to me Democrats have gone 1-for-3. Mr. Trump carried Wisconsin.
Yep.
Tony Evers won.
Yep.
And Mr. Barnes won. But Brian Hagedorn won. So 1-for-3. My question is, what's the significance of both the 2020 and the 2022 elections, Mr. Potential Chairman?
The significance is vast. I would actually add a third election, which is the spring election in 2020.
Okay.
So when I think about the next couple of years, that election is happening on the day of the presidential Democratic and Republican presidential primary.
Yep.
And there could be historically high turnout on that day. It's also a Supreme Court race. And, you know, it won't be the majority-making race because Brian Hagedorn was elected last time. But there's a conservative majority right now that could lose one seat,
yes,
depending on what happens. I think of the spring election as this moment to just build and energize, test out different tactics, try using things like text messages in a way that we haven't done in Wisconsin before to get our voters out to the polls and get involved. Then in the fall, frankly, the whole world is going to look at what happens in Wisconsin in the fall of 2020.
Is that because of the run-up after the Democratic convention? That places importance on Wisconsin?
It's because this is the pivotal swing state. There's a presentation that the group Priorities USA put together and was showing around the country after the 2018 elections, where they said if the election were held today, here's what we think would happen. And every state is red or blue except one. Wisconsin is gray because they could not predict which direction Wisconsin would go.
Mr. Trump is president because of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Where does that analysis put Pennsylvania and Michigan? Mr. Biden is setting up his campaign headquarters in Pennsylvania. Excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah.
I should give you a chance to answer the question.
Those are both absolutely critical states. Wisconsin,
but we're the one that's most up for grabs?
In that analysis, Wisconsin actually would tilt the balance either way in the Electoral College. It was the hardest to predict. And I really think this is a jump ball. We should expect to fight for every single vote. We should expect Republicans to, you know, do things no one's ever done in a presidential election. And we don't know, you know, how many foreign powers are going to be invited to participate by Rudy Giuliani or whoever else.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to need to organize at a scale we've never seen before. And the fact that we have the National Convention, it's both this challenge to make a great convention. It's also an opportunity because we're going to need potentially 15,000 volunteers at the convention. That's the number of volunteers we normally have working across the state on election day during a presidential campaign. So this is an operation at a scale where we can get a kind of whole new generation and every previous generation of folks involved in the party, help to give them a great experience, get them trained and unified, and then come out of that like a rocket to try to win the 2020 race.
So it's a trial run. You're 15,000 volunteers to a Democratic convention.
Yeah.
You want them to stay in the trenches for November of 2020.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Oh, it's interesting.
It's a vast organizing project.
And what's the role of social media?
Social media, it is media for so many people now. And there are people who watch Wisconsin Eye, and there are people who see snips of Wisconsin Eye on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, Instagram. And there's people who, just get information from their friends and family. It's hard to find a TV show where you can buy an ad today that reaches, you know, most of the people you need to reach. It's very different from how it used to be. So you have to be able to be part of the conversation on social media in order to reach folks. There's also all these sort of secondary effects. And at MoveOn, I did a lot of tweeting, and there are so many political reporters who spend all day on Twitter that, you know, that's where their conversation's happening, and the sort of output of it is what shows up in the newspaper the next day.
Okay.
I think, you know, you got to understand what the different audiences are, and then you got to organize. It's not just it's not a broadcast medium, and that's something that I not only think we can do better as a state party, but I think we have a chance to help train county parties, train candidates at every level of office to, you know, help build our ability to reach folks. The right has had a near monopoly on talk radio, with the existence of the exception of Real Resistance Radio, which is now back on the air in Madison and in Milwaukee. I think there are 81 stations carrying right-wing talk radio 24 hours across Wisconsin alone.
81 in Wisconsin alone?
81 in Wisconsin alone. Social media is a way that we can reach people directly without having control of the airwaves. And, Trump and his world have really weaponized social media. I think we need to fight back, and we need to fight back with truth and integrity, which fortunately I believe are on our side as Democrats. But you need to show up and be present every minute of the day.
For the first time in 8 years, there's a Democratic governor of Wisconsin. How would you work with Governor Evers, who would be the leader of your party?
Yes.
How do you see this balance between you potentially as chair and the governor as leader?
Yeah. So the governor is absolutely in the lead. And the governor was elected with a mandate on things like expanding Medicaid, supporting public education, repairing our roads, getting maps that reflect democracy where voters choose their elected officials rather than the other way around. I think the state party can fight for that agenda and can, you know, should work with the governor's team, make the case, organize folks at the grassroots level across the state, and turn up the heat on Republicans. And that's, I think that partnership is fundamental to the success of Democrats in the state and also to the agenda that people voted for and overwhelmingly majorities of Wisconsinites want.
When you look at the map of county by county map of how Wisconsin voted the 2016 elections, much of northern Wisconsin went for Mr. Trump. What's your agenda for rural Wisconsin?
So if you talk to rural voters, the first thing they'll say is what works in Madison doesn't necessarily work around here. Second thing they'll say is that the issues that matter in their lives are issues that matter in every human's life. Getting a good school for their kids, having a good job that pays a decent wage, having clean water to drink, being able to see a doctor when you get sick. The sources of water pollution in rural Wisconsin are more likely to be tainted wells than the lead pipes that you see in parts of Milwaukee. But being able to show up on issues that matter to people, not just on election day when you ask for their vote, but the rest of the time, being able to be present, speak directly to their issues, to what's happening in the dairy crisis right now, and having spokespeople from communities themselves who are credible, who have relationships. I will also say, signage matters a lot more in rural areas than it does in places where there are apartment buildings. So having, you know, candidates' names on the sides of barns, those things really matter. And I think Democrats focus just on Madison and Milwaukee at their peril. I think we need to show up everywhere. And when you look at Tammy Baldwin's map, that's the kind of map Democrats should be aiming for and aiming to build on. There are Democrats in every part of Wisconsin. And as a state party, I'm deeply committed to helping build their resources, build their capacity, and support them to be able to organize where they are, make sure that they reach every voter, that we find people who, you know, neither side has already figured out where they lean. Let's go talk to those people and connect with them on the issues that are affecting their own lives, and then make the case that the Democratic Party can champion their concerns.
You are a millennial.
Yeah.
Why should millennials vote for Democrats? Because you've seen the studies that they're not as interested in politics. They're too consumed with maybe student debt and other things. Why should millennials vote for Democrats?
So millennials and the next generation after millennials might be less inclined to identify with a particular party, but they're the most progressive generations since the invention of modern polling. And when you look at, you know, issues of war and peace, issues of economic justice and equality, racial equality, the list goes on. Young people want progressive change. And you can see it in the March for Our Lives and the climate strike that happened with high school students walking out of their high schools recently. You can see it with the family separation protests across the country. Young people are getting engaged on issues. So our campaign has a platform that spells out the word FIRE. Fight, include, respect, and empower. And the fight is fight on issues between elections, like all the issues I just named. Include and respect is about showing up in every part of Wisconsin, rural areas, communities of color, suburbs where there are a lot of Republicans, there's a lot of Democrats too, as well as cities. And empower is about upgrading our data, technology, and training. Those are things that will allow us to connect with young people who might not know they're Democrats yet, but they sure know what they care about. And the Democratic Party cares about those same things.
I want to ask you about two national issues.
Yeah.
Should U.S. House Democrats begin impeachment against President Trump? The proceedings, should they begin that?
So this is, I'll say two things. One is, I think it's outside of the purview of the state party chair's race.
I understand.
So I can speak from my personal opinion. When I talk to grassroots Democrats across the state, you hear two things. One is, I think there's overwhelming agreement, and not just among Democrats, that the president has committed impeachable offenses. And that, you know, he's crossed.
Are you saying this, or the people you're talking to are both saying this?
I think both. Okay. But we're both saying that.
Just trying to clarify that.
The second thing is that the thing that, you know, as the Democratic Party, our focus is going to be helping win elections for Democrats and advance the progressive agenda. Mm-hmm. And the issues that people are worried about in their own lives for many, many people are about healthcare and clean water and schools for their kids. And so there's a I think the core question around impeachment is, do you think about this from a political lens, or is this transcending politics at this point? And, you know, is it now clear to the public that this is a president that needs to be held into account outside of the strategic calculus, yeah, just on the basis of defending the Constitution? I think that's a robust debate. I think that if the state party puts something in its convention platform about this, then I'll be championing that. But I think we're going to be making the case around the issues in people's lives here in the state party.
Are you a supporter of Medicare for all?
So one thing that has been in the state party's platform since day one is that healthcare is a human right, and everyone should be able to access healthcare. Okay. And I think the path to universal healthcare is something that folks are hashing through right now. I think there's a unified vision that every person should not have to worry about bankruptcy when they go to the doctor. And there's several different paths.
Is it a good thing that 24 Democrats are now running for president, ranging in age from 37 to 77? Do you welcome this as a potential state chair?
So I think there's a huge opportunity in it. I'm running on a ticket with two amazing women.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to
talk about what they would bring.
Yes. So I'm running with Felicia Martin, who is an extraordinary leader and organizer out of Milwaukee. She was born in a rural area in upstate New York, and has a sense of rural Wisconsin that people don't always expect from elected officials in Milwaukee. But she has lived for 40 years in the Sherman Park neighborhood. When President Obama ran for president, I guess he was Senator Obama ran for president, she, after watching his 2004 convention speech, was so inspired, she started knocking on doors before he announced his candidacy. She helped to organize 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week in 2008, was a co-founder of Organizing for America, helped start 22 neighborhood teams in Milwaukee to support the president's agenda. And then the president's team asked her to be a co-chair, along with Russ Feingold, of his campaign in 2012. So she knows how to organize in Milwaukee and to fight for our values just in an extraordinary way. And she was elected to the County Board of Supervisors in a landslide last year.
Okay. And she's running for what? As part
First vice chair.
And then your second vice chair.
So my second vice chair's name is Lee Snodgrass.
Former state senate candidate out of the Fox Valley.
That's right. She's a 24-year Appleton resident.
Right. She ran against Senate President Roger Roth. Yes.
That's right. And it very gerrymandered district. And as a first-time single mom LGBTQ candidate, she got 46.6% of the vote, which was dramatically outperforming what people thought was possible in that district. She's also the chair of the Outagamie County Democratic Party and has helped to double the size of that party, build the diversity and youth in that party. So she brings both a county chair's perspective and a candidate's perspective. And one of the things that Felicia and Lee and I share is a commitment to diversity and inclusion in the candidates that we help to recruit and support in the party, and also a care for candidates even in tough districts where it's more of a long shot. There's more we can do to set expectations at the beginning, to help empower and equip them to be able to run effective campaigns during, and then doing the kind of candidate aftercare, if you will, after people run, to make sure that they know that they're still supported, and help them find a path to running again. There are so many amazing Democrats who ran in 2018 who I hope will be on the ballot again, and their experience in the whole process will help encourage other folks to run as well. Okay. We'll have new maps in 2022, and
yes,
by that time, we want to have done all the organizing necessary to be able to take on districts that were not competitive for so long, but suddenly are actually on the map.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Final topic. Differences between you and Representative David Bowen, the other candidate for Democratic State Chair.
Yeah, so I have tremendous respect for David Bowen and for his ticket, Tammy Joy Wood and Alicia Lorta. We've been crisscrossing the state together and often appearing at the same events. I think we both learn from each other in the course of the race, so it's been a pleasure running. I think we're also both committed to running positive campaigns. I will say, the case for our ticket is the first thing I say in each speech, that we're running because we believe in organizing. I've been working in organizing at Move On, at Avaz, here in Wisconsin. Starting as a young person, I organized students around the state when I was in high school to come and testify at the Joint Finance Committee at the state legislature, and we won $20 million in special education funding that year. The kind of overwhelming focus on organizing and lifting folks up is what we want to bring to the state party, and I think we have a credible argument that we can do that, building on the great work of the folks around the state over the last few years to turn the state pull the state back from the edge of the cliff and win the statewides. That's why folks should vote for us.
When I ask Representative Bowen a difference, he says this with respect, because it is a positive campaign.
Yeah.
He says, but I've been in Wisconsin working as a Milwaukee County Supervisor, and now 3 terms in the State Assembly.
Yeah.
So he's just saying, that's my background.
Taken. Yeah.
You've been in Washington. Do you just want to say anything about that?
Sure. Yeah, and there's no question. David knows more about what's happening in the legislature than I'll know, for a long time. He's absolutely been serving his constituents and our party in those values, and I have enormous respect for that. I think that what I've been doing during that time is working at the cutting edge of organizing on the national scale. Okay. And so I've been able to use technologies and techniques, build networks, get ideas about how to fight and win organizing campaigns that get millions of people into motion in a way that I can bring back to the state party. And I think that's a real asset that I bring and something that I'm hungry to do.
Okay. Final question is the same question I asked Representative Bowen. Your elevator speech. You got 15 seconds. Why are you the most qualified candidate?
So my elevator speech is that I'm running with Felicia and Lee Snodgrass, Madison, Milwaukee, and Appleton. I've been at Move On. I led our campaign against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, helped build that into the biggest ever electoral campaign at Move On, a $38 million operation that worked in 91 House races and 10 Senate and 10 governor's races, leading our work here in Wisconsin and helping build it across the country. And I think the model for how we fought on health care and won in 2018, we can bring to the next elections. Fight on issues between elections. Include and respect everyone in all parts of the state, communities of color, rural areas, suburbs, and cities, and empower with data, technology, and training. Now, that might sound familiar because I said it earlier in this interview.
Yes.
But it is the reason to vote for us.
I understand. Ben Winkler of Madison, one of 2 candidates for the Democratic State Chair. Thanks very much for talking about why you're coming in and talking about your campaign.
Thank you so much.
And just a programming note, Wisconsin and I will be at the Democratic State Convention, and the election is Sunday, June 2nd.
That's right.
Okay. Ben, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.